to a pink verbena.
Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy Y. I'm Hardy Y. I'm on tap once for yes. I'm on tap two for no. I'm gonna tap three times for yes, yes. So I'm in yes, yes. I'll go tap, tap, tap. If I mean no, yeah. Like you say, are you having a good time? No, yeah. Many years ago, I had a friend who had this cassette, and he got it from his father, who had a television and cassette player repair shop, and somebody had brought in a cassette player with the cassette still in it. I guess people did that occasionally, and so they would listen to them, and this one was a jam. Somebody had made a cassette letter, an audio letter, for someone. People used to do that before the internet, before telephones. They would record things on a mini cassette or a regular cassette, and then they'd send them. Say, here, you can hear my voice. It's much better than a letter, which is all succinct and I've thought through. This is me rambling for an hour. And often, they were fairly interesting if you could get something like that. And this was a fella who was playing the organ. He said that he had just learned the organ and was demonstrating this now for this lady friend who, to whom he was sending the cassette letter. And so he was saying, you know, do you like my organ playing? He said it in a very thick accent. And he noted that he was just learning to play the pals, he called them, the pedals. So I called the tape Organ Pals, because he'd say, do you like the way I play the Organ Pals? And he was demonstrating these pedals. And so it was him rambling and talking about his life accompanied by organ playing, amateur organ playing, including lots of ominous low notes. That's very strange. But what a wonderful, one-of-a-kind thing to stumble upon. So if somebody says to you, would you like to listen to an hour of some strange person talking about their life, you might say, well, no, there's no guarantee that I will be entertained. Now, when you go to watch a movie or something, you often go online or you go to your book, your Leonard Maltin or something, you look it up and you say, is this movie any good? I don't want to waste an hour or two of my life unless I know that some sedentary white man liked it in the 70s or something. Say, okay, yes, this one's worth watching. But the thing is that that's if you want a guarantee of entertainment. But some of the most fantastic, exciting moments of my life have come through surprise, when I didn't know what I was going to get. Like the time I bought that storage unit, sight unseen. I wonder if we're going to find anything in the storage unit. No, this is no flashback or anything, but I'm just saying, and I didn't do that. But that's the kind of example that I'm talking about. You buy something, there's no guarantee that you're going to open it up and there's going to be a chest, and you open up the chest and there, oh, there's a body, but it's not really a body. It's made out of gold. Oh, you're rich. And it is, oh, but it turns out it is a body that's been dipped in gold. So you're thinking, do I turn it? It's human remains. It might be evidence of a crime. On the other hand, there's all that gold. Maybe I could just... So it's things like that, wonderful surprises in life. And you can't find them if you always want some sort of guarantee that you're going to be entertained or edified. You can find it anywhere, really. So yes, next time you go to the record store, go for some kind of double album that says somebody reading their shopping list. Do it. You never know what you're going to stumble on. Halfway through, they could say something that is absolutely life-changing. When you go panning for gold, most of what you get is, I'm told, manure or explosives. And then rarely is there any actual gold in there, unless the person who owns the tour put some in there. And you say, I found some gold. Why does it look like a tooth? They go, shut up. Just here, trade it in for fun. 49er bucks. That's what they do. And then it's just, that stuff is just good for the souvenir shop there at Gold Panning World, 49er land. It's fun. I love stuff like that. I love pretending, you know, like, oh, let's pretend that we're trapped in this cave by, you know, Romans or something, that we're, I don't know what we are, 4th century rabbis, or I have no idea, but we're trapped here. Oh, it's, what is it, 70 AD? I'm trapped in this cave. And that's the kind of games I used to play when I was a child. If we were in adjoining cells in a prison, first of all, the cell walls are thicker than they are in like a human being or a flower. So these cells, I'm like a mitochondria, but it's an actual prison. That's what I always say. I'm the powerhouse of my prison cell. And my cellmate says, shut up. I'm trying to go to sleep forever. You just, oh, I'm sorry. I'm trying to stay moving. And I want, no, I'm in the cell alone. And you're in your cell alone. And I'm tapping on the wall saying, hey, I'm another human being over here. Except the cell is just, you're listening. I don't know whether you have headphones or you're in the car or you're in the, probably in your house. Maybe you're on the computer. And I'm over here in my cell. And I'd say, hey, I recognize your struggle because I'm in the same prison. And you say, well, I'm not in a prison. I'm in a luxury hotel room. Oh, it's weird that my prison cell is right up against your hotel room. Yes, could you keep it down? Because we're having a party over here. Oh, all right. Sorry. Yes, I'll just continue my unjust prison sentence. Why am I here? I don't know. Why have I been sent to this world? Why am I in this life? Why am I in this body? Sometimes it feels like this body is a luxury hotel. It is a suite. Oh, my goodness. Like, I'm trying to think what kind of suite. And they're like a grand hotel, you know, and my bottom is the foyer. Or is it the other way around? I don't know. Maybe that's the balcony. And then sometimes when you're in pain or something or in misery or you're very, very sad, your body can feel like a prison or like a timeshare condominium that you feel obligated to visit. Now you're just sitting here and you go, I will enjoy this visit because I paid for it. That's the same thing. That's somewhere in between, I think. Oh, so much of it is attitude and the other isn't. I guess what by so much of it is attitude, I guess I mean a fraction of a percent, and that is an illusion. I would say 100% of it is probably beyond your control, but you don't know that, which is a blessing. That's a blessing. I don't mind thinking I have free will. That's a wonderful thing. I can't figure it out anyway, so it doesn't matter if I don't, because I don't know what's going to happen. I try to figure out what's going to happen. A lot of times they always say the answers are in the back of the book. So every time I get a book, I look in the back immediately and I think maybe something's going on. My life is like that too. I get a picture album. My mom gave me an album that said, your life. And she had put a scrapbook and pictures of me and stuff growing up in there. And I immediately turned to the end and I say, how does it end? How does it end? And she says, well, I don't know. We're not there. That's for your descendants to fill in, I guess. I said, well, that doesn't benefit me at all. I'm going to make something up. I'm going to make artist's rendition of Hardy at an advanced age, or Hardy on his, oh, this is Hardy waving goodbye as he leaves this world. And what world does he go to from there? Oh, when you die, you go to all these fantastic 500 fantastic worlds. No, I don't know. No, I don't know. Do you know? Lots of people tell me they know. Lots of people tell me they don't know. I believe all of them. And I disbelieve all of them. So there you go. And I guess that still leaves it at 50-50. They don't know whether they know, do they? What happens to you? I don't know. Here's a funny thing. Because Hardy, you know what happens when you die? No. Keep going. Hardy, do you know what's currently happening to you while you're alive? No, actually. So I don't know what this is. So I think it's a leap to say what happens when you die. I have no clue what's going on now. So if you do, please write me at 2000 Mary's American, Mary's Avenue of the Americas. No, I don't know. Don't write. You don't have to write me. That's the thing. As another human being, I can intuit what's going on in your life. I have a great uncle who's a regular uncle, who says he was an insurance salesman. And he'd say to somebody, you don't have insurance, right? And they'd say, yeah. And he'd say, you don't have it because you never got around to it. And they would say, yeah. And he'd say, he'd hand them this wooden coin that said T-U-I-T on it. And he'd say, well, now you do, M-L. And he'd cuss at him like that and go, oh, dang. Okay, because that's a round to it. Now what? Now what? And they'd say, well, I guess I gotta get the insurance. And he's like, I thought so. Like that. No, he's very kind. He didn't do that. That's a strong arm. I don't know if you do that would work. What if you just had one strong arm? Do you think people would be afraid of you if you're very, very skinny, but you just had this giant arm? I think they would. I have been watching a lot of old Hawaii 5-0 from 68 into the 70s and everything. And Zulu as Kona. I'm really enjoying it. It's fantastic. Now, it promises excitement and surprise, and it delivers. So you don't have to really cull through anything. It's not like that old crazy tape I was talking about, or my show, or something like that, or a concept album. It's a real straight-up kind of detective police show, except this Steve McGarrett. He's the head of security for Hawaii. That doesn't even really exist in real life. I don't know what he is. He only answers to the governor, and he also has something to do with international security or something. I don't know what he is. He's like a special agent. Now, he doesn't look very intimidating, and he's kind of skinny, but it's implied that he's very, very dangerous, that he's the product of government experiments. He said he came out of a lab, and his skeleton has been replaced with something very, very hard, supernaturally hard, like dried oatmeal. And now he's like, and he's very, simmering right below that, like a volcano. That's so funny. He's just like that. He's full of magma, hot lava. And it's just getting ready to blow his top, but he doesn't quite. But he gets very passionate about things because he's a cop, and he went in it to help people. He was on, I was watching the series ender for the first season is actually the pilot. And it's a two-parter. And he's out on a date with a witness. And she says, she says, why'd you become a cop? And he said, why'd you become a hippie? And you think about that. I thought about that all night long. And I go, wow, yeah. So she said, well, I became a hippie to help people. Which is, if you're thinking of going into something, I don't know. So I was thinking about going into medical care or social work or something like that. Well, add hippie to your list, because I think it's helpful. So she said, and he said, well, that's why I became a cop. And she said, you know what we ought to do is we ought to arrange a exhibition softball game between my people and your people. No, they didn't say that in that episode, but I feel like that happened at some point. And freaks versus fuzz softball tournament on Hawaii. That would be beautiful. The beautiful steel guitar that was invented in Hawaii and the ukulele from Portugal. All beautiful things brought to this tropical paradise that has black sand, some of it. Oh, it's crazy. And that's from Steve McGarrett getting angry. That's an old myth. You say, oh, how did the black sands form? Steve McGarrett found his friend dead on the beach. And his head exploded, and the anger and anguish came out in the form of ashes and lava rock. And it descended on the beaches, and from that day forward, it was never the same. And then McGarrett became the mountain. Oh, it's a beautiful thing. It's a good show. Everybody goes, book him, Dano, book him, Dano. But really, to me, it's Kona, who's played by the comedian performer Zulu, who's funny, underutilized on the show, charismatic, funny, all his screen time. You go, I want to see more of this guy. I think they're not using him because Jack Lord didn't want to be upstaged. I understand that. If it was my show, if I had the Hardy White Adventure Hour and people are going, more Butchie, more Butchie, more Butchie, I'd be like, watch the Butchie show then. But there isn't a Butchie show. So I guess he should just had, Zulu do more stuff. That's all. Zulu's read up a manager took his name and he had to change his name, the spelling, to Zuawulu or something. I'm not terrible. Take your name like that. So you can't be Hardy White anymore. I own the name Hardy White. Well, okay. Well, that's, why would you do that to me? Are you going to be somebody else going to be me? Yes. We're going to curly you. It's going to be Hardy Joe or something. What? Yeah. That you only do that if somebody has a stroke or dies. You can shimp me. What's that? Well, when Shemp passed away, they still had a lot of footage, but not enough to make, a full short. So they just did some other footage of some dude running away, somebody with Shemp hair from behind. And they'd add whatever exposition they needed, for that. And then they'd use the remaining Shemp footage. This is just Star Wars just did the exact thing with Leia. They Shemped Leia. It's often done because actors pass away like that. But if to replace somebody like that, just take him out. So I don't know like that. I want to stay Hardy White. I want to be your Hardy White. I won't be your friend. Oh, why are you any kind of special friend? I'm not. That's just a thing. Oh, I'm not special at all. I'm just here to tell you I think you're all right. And how do I think you're all right? I think that you probably have expectations for getting through this life that were put into your head by others and that make you feel as if you're not doing a very good job at it. And I say if you are currently alive at any given minute, you're doing exactly what you're supposed to do. And there's no, I don't know if there's no good, right, people who are succeeding think they're doing it right. Everybody who hasn't fallen yet thinks they're an acrobat, and after you fall, that's just like, well, maybe I wasn't, I guess, but and even the time that they weren't responsible for the success, they're still attributing to their own choices, but I'm telling you, sometimes you float and sometimes you fall, and if you really want to go to that special contented place, realize that you're not responsible for either one, your successes or your failures, really. What? I'm not responsible? You know what I mean. You're at the center of it, that's for sure. But who knows? My goodness. I'm only saying this to people who feel too responsible for things. Not for people who want to hurt others. You got to understand that there's a lot of good people who are who damage themselves because they think they're bad people. And they do that because people have tried to control them or for whatever. They get in your head like that. And they think that, you're not doing it right. They say, well, I think I am with all my heart. I am trying. And I have then this notion that, people don't want to succeed or that people don't want to, they just want to take advantage of others. It's just not true. Oh, beautiful souls. Just a lot of them have been crushed. Been crushed by this crazy world. And I recognize that. And so I just give you a little space to be uncrushed, to unfold. So somebody's stepped on you and you got all accordioned like that. I'm just going to sit here with you while you unfold. You've been a cartoon. You've been crushed down to a pancake by a steamroller. I'm going to sit here while you puff back up. It's like one of those sponges you get in an expo. It's got the name of the business on it. You think it's a business card. You stick it in some water and it becomes a sponge. I'm going to wait for you to rehydrate and become a sponge again. I'm going to wait for you to rise up. I'm going to put that water, that nourishing water in it. What is it? It's love. It's understanding. It's patience. I'm going to be patient with you. I'm going to wait here with you. Sometimes the only thing that you require of another is acknowledgement of your predicament, and that's all I'm going to do. I don't have any solutions for you. Nothing can be more irritating than unsolicited solutions. Nobody wants to be schooled on the street corner. Nobody wants to be cured when they didn't ask for a cure. Ah, I tell you, some of us just want to know that somebody else is there. I like sitting on a bench and maybe someone will sit next to me, another human being, and we need not speak. It is enough that we know that both of us are creatures, that we are alive at the same time, that our hearts beat, that our lungs expand and contract. Oh, what a crazy world this is. What a strange life to be in it with you, watching Hawaii 5-0. There was a shot where McGarrett and, I guess, the governor, I don't know why he goes out with it, like they're just on a boat talking about how we should crack this case. Was the president of the United States unavailable? Yes, usually he's out there with Lyndon Johnson. You know, how are we going to do this, McGarrett? I don't know, President Johnson. I'm thinking of, can I borrow a submarine? So they're out on this boat. Like I said, I think it's the governor and McGarrett. And it's a great series because it's shot in Hawaii. And, you know, a lot of it outside. And so the scenery is wonderful. And they're on this boat, and it's obviously kind of a stormy day. So the angle behind McGarrett's not all that stormy, so he's like well lit. And then you can tell when they're shooting the governor that it's overcast. So it looks crazy. So it's a live shot. They're actually on the boat, and the background is real, but they got him lit with lights because to get the shadows off of him. And there's it has that crazy, unreal feel. We go, oh, that's a backdrop. And then you realize, no, it's not a backdrop. It's just that we're not seeing people, used to seeing people be professionally lit when they're standing against a storm. I want to do that for you. As we stand with a storm to our back, our faces fall into shadows, and perhaps we do not get recognized by McGarrett, by our savior McGarrett, and we need someone to light our face, to shine some beautiful, flattering light on it the way they do in movies. And we'll bounce it off this reflective material, and I think we could just do it. Let's get the shot. And so I light your face to prove you're there. In this storm, I haven't forgotten you. Oh, I haven't forgotten you. Listen, take my hand. I think they've forgotten both of us. We'll just sit here, both of us forgotten. It's so much less difficult that way, isn't it? That they didn't just forget you. They forgot you and Hardy. It can't be that bad if they forgot both of us. It must not be our fault because, you know, stuff happens. But here we are in the storm, you and I. Here we are in the storm, and people don't even think we're in the storm because the lighting on our face is so realistic. They go, oh, they were in a studio. That's backlit. That's a rear screen projection. I'm telling you, no, it isn't. Because look at the other picture of McGarrett. He's clearly not. He's on the boat, and I think they would have done that. And so I'm telling you, hop on this boat with me. There's surprises ahead. You don't know what's going to happen. It could be something crazy. When McGarrett goes on that ship and finds the secret sensory deprivation chamber that the Chinese agent has built there in a laboratory on a freighter, on an oil tanker. And there's a great scene, too, in this. I don't know if you've ever seen these wonderful pictures. I don't know whether it's in my mind, it's sort of a Norman Rockwell, but it's a shirtless guy on a boat, you know, and he's got one of those big wrenches. You know the time I'm talking about? And there's a big, it's on a big bolt, and they're always opening and closing big bolts. Sometimes they hammer the wrench, and it's always this shirtless bodybuilder guy who's smeared with grease and sweat. They absolutely reenact that. In that Hawaii 5-0 pilot, where McGarrett is standing there and he's wielding the sledgehammer and the burly whatever it is you call somebody who works on an oil rigger, is there trying to open this thing. You'd think they just, I'd say, could we, ever got some W, I'd be yelling, WD-40? They shouldn't put these dang bolts on so tight they can't get them off. If you've got to hammer it off, you've over-tightened. And I was, I'm sitting there and I'm yelling, torque wrench. Because if you know how tight you put it on, but you know, they never yell. I'm sure you've yelled that at horror movies before when they yell, torque wrench, like that. Or Allen key. I've yelled at the screen before. Because a lot of times they've just chosen the wrong tool. And you go, well, that guy's doomed. On Star Trek, you would see, they would go to the beam to the surface, and the fella that had vice grips, you'd always know he was going to get it, because you go, vice grips are just too old timey. You need a phaser. What are you going to do? Like pinch it? Pinch the alien? And then it was so predictable. If you've ever watched those old, oh my gosh, that's what I love to talk, those cultural touchstones, where I can say something like, do you remember the time McGarrett pulled his face off and he was, it turned off that he's just, turned out he's just a skull. It happened in the war. And how is he still alive? Again, I guess it's that the government rebuilt him or something. And but the skull head is too scary for a hero. People expect that from a villain. So, heroes have to be attractive, and all the villains are unattractive or something. You notice, ever notice that, except for the when it's not true? Sometimes they flip it, maybe half the time, but most of the time they do one or the other. I'm glad to be with you, because the alternative is being not glad to be with you. Just don't be with me. Okay, that's another alternative. Gosh, there's so many choices. I'm glad I made the one to be with you. I could have made the one to not be together. You know, all we have is our experience, basically. That's all I'm sure of, is that I'm feeling things, seeing things, kind of. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why they're happening. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I don't know who you think I am. I don't know who I think I am. I don't know who you think you are. I don't know who you think you are. But, we're all thinking something. And it's a wonderful mystery to most of us. And I like how it's a mystery to ourselves. There is nothing more mysterious than the stuff that you're going to say tomorrow. You think, I didn't see a lot of it coming. Events have happened recently, just among friends or family, and some of them you think life is predictable, goes along, and you get up every day, and for a while, boy, you're really on a roll for predictability. You think, I am just, the coffee maker is exactly where I knew it would be. Yes. I come out every morning, I go, fridge, to my right. Yes. It's going down just like I knew it would. I laid there in bed and I said, I'm going to get up, and the one dog is not going to want to get up because it's lazy and older. The other dog is going to be raring to go. I'm going to let them out. I'm going to have to call the hound's name multiple times. Come on, Orwell, come on, let's go, stretch. He's going to stretch. And that goes down exactly the way I think it will. And that's because I can see the future. No, it's not. It's not that at all. It's just, it's a little momentum there. And things are different all the time. I'm just not seeing the differences. I want to see the things that are the same. So that's what I'm seeing. And it looks like it's the same every day, but it isn't. A lot of subtle details are different. Isn't that interesting?
No, I don't know. Move on. Tell me a true crime tale. I thought I was with McGarrett. And you say, well, that's not true. Well, you don't know the ones you're listening to on the podcast are true either, necessarily. Yes, I could look it up. Look it up. Try doing this. Try witnessing a crime in your neighborhood and then try and find some mention online of it or in the news or something. Sometimes there's never anything. And you go, well, surely I should be able to search something, court records, and go, nope, sorry. It's so weird how things just kind of disappear. Stuff happens, and you go to look it up, and they make it very difficult to find out what's happened, actually. You take for granted that you're being told everything. I sound like a... You think you're being told everything. I just mean that
there's lots that goes on that you don't know. And it's hard to deal with that most of our life is hidden, that most of the occurrences of the universe are hidden from us, and that what we see is so small, and the picture that we can put together from the information we get is so small. A friend was doing a jigsaw puzzle the other day to pass the time, and I said, "Are you excited to find out what it's going to be?" And they said, "No, I know what it's going to be. I'm working from the picture." And I go, "Oh, you know, that's cheating. That's cheating. Then you know what it's going to be. Try doing it without the picture. I thought that was the whole point. Find out, then you're excited to find out what it is. I don't even think you need the picture necessarily. You can just look for the pieces that go together or something. It'll take longer. Don't you want it to be a challenge? It's like on your exercise bike, you always turn up the resistance. Turn up the resistance on your puzzles. Do it with the pictures all flipped over like in The Accountant. He did it. That kid did it upside down. So I'm just saying, I'm just a suggestion. I like puzzles, but I'm not very good at them because they're a bit of a measure of intelligence, something that is not my strong suit, but something I love, how I love every bit of mine. And I know if you don't have much, it's very precious to you. It's like hair. It is like hair. It's exactly like hair. So if you don't have very much, you grow yours out as long as you can and then swirl it around to make it look like you have more. And that's what I've done with my intelligence. I'm not embarrassed by it. You know, of course there's smarter people. There's not smart people. I don't even know what smart is. So ability to kind of figure things out, maybe? I don't know. Well, there are really pretty good objective measures of it. Let's just put it that way. So I've always been blessed to have enough to navigate a lot of things, like shopping and talking. But mine's fallen short when it comes to figuring out what's going on. I know a lot of people have a better idea than I do, and they seem to be pretty sure about things. I see that, especially online. You say, "One thing I do know is that Area 51 is there's special tests going on." They go, "Wow, there's one thing you do know," and then you say something that to me sounds like maybe how would you know that? So I don't know. I don't know what people know and what they don't. Bless them. I can tell when people do know. Like if someone says, "I know how to juggle," and then you watch them juggle, you go, "Okay, that turned out that is true." So there's some things that you can definitely demonstrate. "I know how to speak French." Do it. Nope, you're faking. See, those are pretty easy to figure it out. So that's why I've always been very honest about who I am, because if the minute you open your mouth, you do anything, it's going to be, I think, fairly obvious. I've never fooled anybody about anything. Now, sometimes in job interviews, it's not enough time to let the truth really come out. I've found that out. Say, "Oh gosh, I made a really good presentation. My shortcomings didn't come up, and that's going to be a problem because they are legion. And so we needed to discuss those." It's so funny that we got to small talking and my qualifications didn't come up because they are non-existent. So this first day is going to be curious. I wonder how it's going to go down. But I tell you, I do love surprises. And I've had jobs like that. And then they wonder... Would you ever have that they hire you, that they find out you're incompetent, and then they go, "You're incompetent." And I think, you know, I really thought I was being forthright. You know, y'all, I'm not trying to pass the blame on, but y'all hired me. And I really, you know, you should have seen that coming a mile away. When I kept changing the subject to make small talk, you didn't recognize that as a strategy that people who don't have an answer do? Oh, gosh. I do it with the show. Say, "I think he's going to come out and talk about something. I don't know. He keeps switching gears. Why do he keep switching gears?" "Nothing. We'll be there in a minute." Turns out I don't know where I'm going. I'm just so hopeful that I'm going to come up with something in that time. You know, and that's a good, I think that's that kind of optimism. You know, we get in the car and you say, "Drive me to Carolina Street, and I say, I am on it. And we drive around for a while, and after about a half hour, you go, what's going on? Well, you know, it takes like 10 minutes to get to Carolina Street. And I say, hey, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know where it is. But I thought if I drive around a bit, it's not a very big town. Maybe we'll just coincidentally run into it. And then you say, why didn't you just ask for directions? Sometimes it's difficult to ask for help when we need help. Because we want, you know, it could be that we're hopeful, that we're embarrassed. But, oh, I like asking for help. I ask for help all the time. And there's a suspicion that people ask for help when they don't need it. And I don't think that's true. I think if people can do something themselves, they do. You know, nobody is. Mark Twain was a crap person, I bet. And I was, what are you saying? Just hear me out for a minute. He put this thing in our head that this, that Huck Finn, Tom Sawyer, I guess it's just, I don't know which one of them it was fooling people to get them to paint this fence for him, to whitewash Aunt Fanny's fence. I don't remember her name. And it's not important. It is, though. It's not, though. It's just the aunt in the story. It's why you're reading the book. It's important because you go, who's this? So it's Tom Sawyer's aunt, I think. Huck Finn is an orphan. His parents were killed by the person that he hangs out with or something. And the Tom Sawyer, though, is tricking other people into doing it for him. Now, this does not seem, I don't know that this is a characteristic that a lot of people outside of maybe like sociopaths have. I don't know that, I've never really met a lot of people like that. It's like Mark Twain is revealing something about himself. Say, yes, you know, or how about these types that trick you into doing their work for them? You know, what are you talking about? You're talking about you, probably. I don't know anybody like that. I know, yes, there are people that try to get away with things and everything like that. Of course there are. Of course there are. Using that as an excuse not to feel for somebody or help somebody is absolutely a bad thing to do, because then you might miss somebody who does need the help, and it's not worth it. It's better to be taken advantage of and to give something to somebody who doesn't need it than to miss somebody who does. Oh, that's a tragedy. If I were to not offer up my hand, to offer up my love to somebody who needed it because I thought it was going to be taken by somebody who didn't need it, and then I didn't give somebody something they needed, oh, I'm giving out water because you're thirsty and somebody who's not thirsty comes up and take a drink. I don't say, well, that's it. Forget it. Nobody gets water. That's ridiculous. Everybody still gets water. I will just go and have a talk with a person who took it when they didn't need it. Maybe they'll learn something. Maybe if I was up in their face and up in their life and cared about them, they would understand what this is all about. Oh, drink from this well. You don't have to lean in. If you do fall in, don't worry. There's a well for swimming and a well for drinking. Two different wells, and if you fall in one, then that's the swimming well. Oh, nobody drowns here. We're all going to drink our fill. Boom, boom. If you look in this well, you'll see your reflection. Don't fall in love with it. It's hard not to. Oh, why? Well, I'm not only am a well owner, but I'm a diagnosed narcissist. Is that right? Yes, most well owners are, because if you got a good enough well, you're going to see your reflection, and you're going to be looking in there, and you're going, I look good. Don't you mean well? I didn't want to do it. I was too low-hanging fruit. I am your friend. I want to be your friend. I want to be your friend. Am I doing okay? I guess. There was always, I remember, I've had friend groups at different times in my life. Usually when you're younger, you have a friend group. Maybe if you work at an office, I don't know. But there's not everybody in the friend group was a very well socialized creature. You know what I'm saying? Some people had to be the quirks of their behavior had to be tolerated more than others because we're all so different. Everybody's different. We're all wired different. We think differently. We've had different experiences. You know, if you were to go to the shelter, you're absolutely cognizant of that in the dogs. You say some of these dogs have been beat. Some of them have had terrible experiences. Some of them have been bred to be all high-strung and everything. They're all different. They all got different challenges. You don't expect all of them to be Lassie. They're not all going to be sitting there saying, come quickly to me. There's an emergency. They're not always going to be like that. Some of them, you know, it's like, hey, I love you. I eat poo. That kind of, that's most dogs, right? So we understand that, but when it comes to human beings, oh, we expect so much. We expect so much. And yet, if you just open your eyes and you look at the experience of most of these creatures, oh, the things that must be going on inside of them based on what has happened, it's hard to tell. Approach them with great caution and reverence. That's the way I do it. I come upon you, I say, I don't know your circumstances, but I, you know, it's like we're all meeting in the desert. And if I meet you in the desert and you're coming the other way, I know that you've been through something, just like I've been through something. So I know that you are not to be trifled with, because if you're walking out here in this desert of this existence, of this life, man, I would take my hat off if the weather conditions weren't so horrid. But we're out here in this desert. Know that my respect is there. And that's what I'm saying. There's too much discounting of the greatness. You know, human beings are both nothing and amazing, beautiful things, right? You know, at the same time, and that is, it's absolutely possible. It's your language that makes it seem like a contradiction. That's all. It's your language that makes it seem like you have who was it? Was it Butchie or was it a historic rabbi who said, you know, keep two thoughts in your pot. Is it Akiva? I don't know if it was Akiva or Butchie. I'm just saying, keep two thoughts, pieces of paper in your pocket at the same time. One of them says, you are but dust and ashes. And the other one says, the universe was created for you. All right? Now, they're both true. You're nothing and you're everything. How can they be true at the same time? They're only a contradiction because you've got a word everything and you've got a word nothing. That's all. And your language is messing it all up for you. If you thought about it wordlessly for a while, you'd understand. Oh, let's think about things wordlessly. I can't think about things wordlessly because I'm on the radio. And when I'm on the radio, there is a requirement. I am told that I must use words. Words or music. Sound. Use sound. People have used silence. It's very funny. Oh, it's very funny. And it's a big joke. How long can we be silent on the radio? People put out songs that are nothing but silence. But if words create paradoxes and silence is the only way to get to it, how do I upon the radio use sound or words to achieve that? Well, I take them and I rob them of their meaning. A lot of them, I will take them, I will mess them around, I will change things just a little bit, like taking a painting and repainting the eyes on one of them. Are those Google eyes that are on St. Francis there? Yes, St. Francis is a Google eyes, and what is he holding? It looks like he's holding a parrot. Well, that's possible. He did like the animals, but I don't know if a parrot was one. Look very closely. It's not a parrot. It's a toucan. It's a toucan, and it's vomiting cereal. Why is it doing that? It's doing that to just disrupt things. It's doing that because the language has fell in, and the language created a layer of dust, and that dust obscured meaning and created complacency, and you thought you knew what was going on, because the painting had been accumulating layers of dirt over the years. But then if we clear the dirt away, we see the magnificent colors. Oh, the magnificent colors of the painting. But they're being obscured. By who? By Hardy White. Hardy White is blowing soot and experience on things. He doesn't want those vibrant colors to be there all the time. Sometimes he wants it to seem like a dream. Like you're looking through a mist at something. What am I seeing, Hardy? I don't know. I think you're seeing what you want to see sometimes. The only thing that I can guarantee that I say that is true is that I am another human being, and that I long for love, and that I long to be connected, and I long to be accepted, and I longed to not be alone. Oh, We are not solitary creatures, are we?
I am.
Well, I am right now. I enjoy my solitude sometimes, and other times I decidedly do not. I don't think I would enjoy my solitude if I needed stuff, which I do regularly. So, there you go. It'd be hard to depend on you, like live alone in the woods or on a desert island or something. That would be unbearable, I think. And not just because you'd be lonely, but just because, like, I don't know how to. I mean, I guess I could make my own coconut hut or something. But wouldn't it be better to have somebody who has that kind of skill set, and I would be willing to pay you in poetry or little songs that I wrote? So you, how it would go? You would do things like provide our shelter and our food, and then I would sing to you or speak poems to you, and then we'd each have work that we're doing. We'd each be doing, that's commerce right there. So I see you're now hauling that tree trunk looks very heavy. Perhaps this will be of help. Oh, tree trunk, that I drag through the woods like some sort of body, like the body of an elephant, perhaps. Is the elephant flat as a pancake? Is the elephant round like a tree trunk? In this case, yes, it is round like a tree trunk. And it also is dragged like a sucker through the mud to its new home. Stop? Do you want to stop? Stop. Okay, I'm sorry. If you want to work in silence, perhaps I shall sing something to you. And that will soothe your breast, or both your breasts. I don't know which breast it'll soothe. I'll tell you what, sometimes say, well, my left breast is a little bit country, and my right is a little bit rock and roll and smaller. So you don't know what we require as human beings. I require intermittent friendship and acknowledgement that the struggle of life is real and intense and crushing. Yes, oh, I'm your friend. Come to my house. We can do things together. The little things give pleasure. Like what? Like rubbing your ear? I like to rub my ear a little bit. I wouldn't put it high on the pleasure list. So would you like to sort of mindlessly play with your earlobe or a Caribbean vacation? Well, they're both pleasurable. I guess it's just degrees. What do you have your degree in? I have my PhD in wanting to be your friend. I have it in wanting to sit. I have my master's degree in being on the other side of that cell wall, knocking on it and saying, hey, I'm over here too. Do not despair. Do not despair, because then I won't have to despair. Let's both of us agree not to despair. And then we'll magically float up together. I will lift you and you will lift me, and then we're floating. How is that possible? Well, you know, we're doing this as with our emotions in mind, so gravity doesn't apply to that. So yes, we can float. We can fly using each other's compassion, our love, our understanding. We can buoy. We can buoy one another. Buoy. It's good to buoy one another like a buoy out there. If you've ever gone boating in your boat, you've boated by a buoy. If you've boated by a buoy, then you know how important they are. And I'm going to stop now, but that was so fun making those words. You can do that too. Hey, here's a fun project. When you're done listening to the show, go somewhere very private and just go through all the different consonant sounds and put vowels against them. And you think that's absurd, but it's actually a meditative practice too. I've seen, you can sit there and, okay, this sounds ridiculous, but I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, and you're going to think I'm joking, but whatever. So, I was doing some research into meditation and particularly Jewish mystical meditation, not to practice, just kind of a scholastic interest, let's say. I'm interested in what people do to concentrate and to achieve different mental states. And one of the exercises was putting consonants against certain vowels, certain special consonants against certain vowels, and sort of repeating them and saying that. And, you know, you can see how that would get you into a, like a mantra or something, get you into kind of a mindless state. Well, I was, you know, reading that, and I thought, man, that sounds really familiar. Where have I heard that before? And then I realized, from the greatest rabbi of all time, Rabbi Moses Horowitz, the Moho, also known as Mo Howard, taught me swinging the alphabet. And you've heard that, I'm sure, and it goes like this. So what I'm saying is that I'm about to give you a meditative technique, and I was just curious if you want to try using this. And it goes like this. B-A-Bay, B-E-B, B-I-Bicky-Bi, B-O-Bo, Bicky-Bi-Bo, B-U-Boo, Bicky-Bi-Bo, Boo, C-A-Say, C-E-C, C-I-Sicky-Si, C-O-So, Sicky-Si-So, C-U-Su, Sicky-Si-So, Su, Dump, Bum-Ba-Dum-Bum-Bum, D-A-Day, D-E, modulated, D-A-Day, D-E-D, D-I-Dicky-Di, D-O-Do, Dicky-Di-Do, D-U-Do, Dicky-Di-Do, Do. Do 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 f a f a f e f e f I f I f o. But I got to make sure that I don't bananarama myself. I don't want to say. Let's do Chuck. So anyway, that's that. You can do that at home, just swinging the consonants against the vowels like that. And it gets you to a different state. It'll get you to a state of mindlessness, as will listening to my show. Why would I want to be mindless? People pay good money to go to meditation retreats to achieve the state that I give you for free every Thursday. I'm half kidding. But it's true. There's different ways to achieve that feeling, you know, of being lost and turned around. That's what I want to do. I want to spin you around in a circle, all right? And then say, now go off and try to find it. It's fun to be dizzy. I mean, it actually makes me vomit violently. But it's sort of fun to be disoriented. Hated. To disorient yourself. To be surprised. That's fun. People do, that's why people get wasted. You don't have to do that because that's physically taxing. There's so many ways to do it without any kind of substances or anything. It's just you have to let go. You have to find that part of your brain, and it is a part of your brain. There's a part of your brain that is repressing you, that is keeping you from doing things because it doesn't want you to be rejected. I don't want you to be rejected. I don't want you to be cast out, you know? No one does. So, you know, that's good. You don't want to do things that would hurt people or embarrass you or anything like that. But some people got it on too strong. You got it on too high. And what you're doing is it's preventing you from exploring parts of your mind. It's preventing you from thinking certain things because you're of fear. You're afraid of that, of if you don't conform or if you express yourself, that you'll be rejected. You know, whether you're like in a group and it's, let's say you're an artist or something, and there's a quality of judgment and competition that runs through your whole circle, right? So you're like, man, I got to maintain a certain attitude because I don't want to look naive, you know? I don't want to look sentimental. I don't want to look weak. You know, I want to look, you know, informed and clever. I want to look ahead of the game, right? And so you put aside all these things that may actually exist in you because you're embarrassed. And that, you know, it's just like if you had a sibling or something that was special needs or something. You're going, no, you go hide in that room because you embarrass me. What? That's ugly. Don't do that with yourself. Don't hide those parts of yourself that you think are embarrassing. That's you. If somebody doesn't understand that, if they don't understand that your love for your sibling or something, if they're going to judge you for that, then you don't need them as friends. But it's true. That's true. If you're more concerned about somebody else, if you're willing to hurt yourself so somebody else, thinks you're cool, you gotta stop now. Because there's those of us who can sort of do both at the same time. I am not going to be afraid. I'm not going to be shackled by other people's strange judgments. I'm not going to be shackled by other people's self-oppression. It's just got to stop. It's got to stop. I can't love completely without it. I can't understand. I can't find that part of myself that helps, that loves myself and others, that feels, if I'm constantly crippled by this self-consciousness. I'm going to wear whatever hat I want. Let's let the chips fall where they may. I'm going to sing the song I want. And if this, by doing it, it reveals my ineptitude, so be it. I only have one life. I am not going to wait to do any of this. I'm going to do it now because I will be dead soon. Soon, Hardy? Any time I'm dead is too soon as far as I'm concerned. So I need to get some stuff done. Why? What's the point? There's no point. It's inside of me. It's an effort to keep it in. So I'm going to let it out. And some of it is pleading. Some of it comes out as, oh, Lord, help me. This is a hard life. Some of it comes out as tears. Some of it comes out as joy. Some of it comes out as laughter. Oh, some of it comes out as song. Some of it comes out as cursing. Some of it comes out as screaming and yelling. It all is in there. And I can't deny it. And I know there's a 100% probability that you are feeling strange things that you can't explain to. And that this place is a mystery to you and that you are a mystery to you. But you know you're feeling it and it feels real. It is real. It's real because we say it's real. And you are real, my friend. And I'm real. And we have been brought together. And we don't know why. But I was going to say we're speaking to each other. We are not. I am speaking to you. Oh, I heard that. I heard you. Wow. All right. I guess we are speaking to one another. That's a beautiful thing. Hop. I don't know how I heard that. I think I heard it just through my heart. I knew it had to be. Oh, thank you for being with me today and listening to the show. In what way was it a show? Oh, that's a very good point. Bum. It wasn't particularly show-like, was it? And it wasn't a show. It was a letter. It was me speaking to you on one of those old cassette tapes, sending you a letter from somewhere. Letting you know I'm fine and asking if you are and showing you how I've learned to play something, play an organ. And the organ is my brain. Oh, my friends, thank you for being with me. This is Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White, Hardy White with Miracle Nutrition on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope. 91.9 in New York City, New York, and Rockland County, New York. And online, WFMU.org, worldwide, listening worldwide. Some of you in other countries. Some of you in the same country as I am. But we're on the same world. We're on the same corner of the universe. And I'm so glad to be here with you, my friend. Thank you, and I will see you again next week.
down, down to the place of death. Oh, this is a story about a blind man who stood on the wayside, and he
was blind.
Yes, he was. And when he heard the Savior was passing by, he said, oh, somebody tell me when the Savior is now. I've been standing here all day long. I want to chip down. I've got to go down to the place of prayer. I didn't see no one.